All right, good morning. So I think I'm going to skip finishing up the buffer transfers that we were talking about last week with OpenGL, because I really want to spend some time talking about WebGL and convincing everyone that I think it's a very good thing moving forward. But just the main point that we missed for the buffer transfer stuff is there can be implicit synchronization between transferring a buffer and then drawing from it. So, for example, if you do, if you copy data from system memory and the GPU memory, then you get a draw. The draw can't start until that copy finishes. And likewise, if you have a draw call and it's pulling from a buffer, and then you try to modify the buffer afterwards, you might get implicitly stalled because the draw didn't finish. So there's various techniques to kind of minimize the amount of implicit synchronization that happens. In fact, you can go so far as to do your own explicit synchronization. And then the chapter that I printed out has more details for those of you that are interested. I will not test you since we didn't cover all of it. I won't put it on the final or anything like that, but the information is there. I think it's really important for if you're really trying to get good performance. Let's see. So today we'll talk about WebGL, but before we do, just some announcements. So homework 5, I think you guys noticed I put it out. This is a small homework. I think that you can probably do it in one sitting for maybe, 2 to 5 hours maybe. It's a bunch of fragment shaders to do image processing. I think you guys will get a kick out of it. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it's pretty easy. I don't know, you guys tell me, but in fact, I'll run it for you here. So I gave you a framework that can just render an image. It renders a full screen quad, and each pixel on the screen or each fragment corresponds to one pixel in the image or one texel in the texture. And here it's just passing through. This fragment shader just reads the texture and outputs it. And then here it does a box blur. So this is a 7x7 kernel. So each fragment, each pixel output takes the surrounding 7x7 pixels and averages them. So it's just a naive box blur. And 7x7 is a pretty big kernel size. So I give you these two shaders. Then from here you can build an image negative, which is just 1 minus the texture color. This should be a give me. It's very easy. Here, this is a Gaussian blur. It's very subtle. Here's no blur, here's Gaussian blur. This is just a 3x3 kernel. And this is different than the box blur because the weight depends on how close you are to the actual pixel. And you could also do 5x5 or et cetera, based on a 2D Gaussian. And everyone's seen a Gaussian distribution before, right? It looks like a hump on a camel's back. Let's see, here's grayscale. So you can get the luminance and then output it for grayscale. It's pretty easy. Here is 2 Sobel filters, which are 3x3 kernels, which will be implemented similar to the Gaussian blur. Here's 2 Sobel operators that are used to do edge detection. So one for horizontal, one for vertical. And this is screen space edge detection as opposed to finding silhouettes using geometric methods or other techniques. And then, this actually builds on the grayscale and the luminance operator. And then from here, the edge detector, we built on that to do tune shading in screen space, which is cool. Basically, you run the edge detector and you go, am I on an edge? Okay, solid black. If not, then I quantize the colors so that we only have a handful of unique colors. And look, it's sucking up all the CPU, even though all the work's being done on the GPU. And this is just one technique for doing tune shading here. So you could also do this in a fragment shader based on the diffuse color. You could use, instead of doing a smooth diffuse color, you could use that to look up into a 1D texture or threshold it just with a few unique colors. And then you guys can do something open-ended. So if you want to do an emboss filter or any other filter of your choice, have at it. Any questions about the filters, the image processing filters? One important point is, although we're doing this on a static image, it is very common to do these as post-processing effects in a game. So it's just as fast to do this on a static image as it is on a dynamic scene. Right? So a lot of times you render off-screen to a texture, and then you read that texture, and then do your post-processing here. Okay, so I guess the new thing that we're doing here with this assignment is this can be done in teams of two, one team of three. Whoever signs up first as a team of three is fine. And it has to be done in a team. And we're going to do it with pair programming, meaning I only want one from two people. I only want one part, piece of code. And I want you guys to work on that code at the same exact time. So you guys better like each other. So the idea here is we're looking for ways that we can foster collaboration, right? And I think that by allowing you guys to work together, I think we're going to foster some collaboration. I think you'll see a lot of learning from each other. I mean, I've talked to several students in this class and have seen that happen. So I'd like you guys to give it a try. In terms of how do you do pair programming, you know, one person's at the keyboard, one person's kind of navigating, and you should swap back and forth. And the person who's not typing is still paying attention. They're still looking at the code, and they're still, you know, thinking about, oh, is there off by one error, and the big picture, is this the right thing we should be doing? And let's give it a try. Let's see what you guys think about it. But then the follow-up here is that this is due a week from now on Monday, and then that next Wednesday, we're going to do a small quiz in class just to make sure that each individual student really understood it. You know, because if I let you guys pair program, you can just, like, convince your buddy to do the whole assignment, and then you'd get the grade, right? So we're going to do a small quiz, and, like, you know, you don't really have to study for it. If you do the assignment, you'll get 100 in the quiz. Like, it's really not hard. But if you didn't do it, or if you guys just, like, split the work down the middle, then you'd probably get a 50. So it's important that even though you're only submitting one part of code, that you feel this joint ownership for it. All right, what questions do you guys have about homework? Cool. Alright, so what else is going on here in the class? We have a final on Tuesday, so is that 3 weeks from tomorrow, I want to say? This final is going to be a combination of take-home. I'm going to give it, you know, whenever you guys demo your projects, I'm going to give you guys a take-home final, which will be some large percentage of your grade. And then we'll do a part in class. It's closed book, closed notes. And then that'll be it. Like I said, the final's 10% of your grade. I'm announcing it now, but I wouldn't even be thinking about it until you're done with your project. The project's way more important. And after the final, we'll have a networking event that follows. We did one last spring. It was pretty cool. This year, we'll probably do just like pizza or something in the SIG lab. But I'll make a formal announcement when I know for sure. And then the final thing is project presentations, right? So I have them scheduled last day of class, which is 2 weeks from today, right? We're almost over. The semester's just flying. However, I think that we only have 80 minutes in this class, and we have 18 presentations, right? So that's like, you know, not much time each, 4 minutes maybe. And I think you need more time than that. So I might schedule something during the reading days, which is that Wednesday through Friday, so that we have more. So you'll have a few extra days to put the finishing touches on your project, and you'll have more time to present to it. It'll just be fairer, more fair for you guys. Okay, and then just so you guys see where we're going, if you guys aren't looking at the schedule on our website, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about WebGL today, and then I'm going to be out of town the rest of the week. But Varun is coming in to talk about mobile GPUs on Wednesday. And that is like general architecture. What's a mobile GPU look like compared to a desktop GPU? And then a week from now, I'm going to look at mobile graphics. Because not only do the GPUs look different, but they've implemented the rendering pipeline differently. Same abstraction, OpenGL. But under the hood, they kind of sort things quite a bit differently. And that has interesting performance characteristics. And then Varun will give us a final lecture on the most recent NVIDIA and AMD and Intel architecture. So I know we've been talking about Fermi a little bit in this class, but we haven't really fully looked at it. You know, like I say things like, oh, you can't have recursion, or you can't dynamically allocate memory. Well, things are changing with the GPU. And I assume we'll even talk a little bit about Kepler, which just came out, the 680, which just came out a couple weeks ago. And then that's it. I mean, this class is finishing quickly. Any questions about anything before we talk a little bit about WebGL? All right. Okay, so when I look at WebGL, there's really two ways to approach it. One is from a web developer's point of view, and you look at the web and how it's evolved over the past, you know, 20 years or whatever. There's been text on web pages, right? And it's particularly useful because you can hyperlink this text. And then there's images, right? Standard, right? And then we add video, right? And video is just, it's, you know, it's a commodity at this point. You look at YouTube, there's video everywhere. So these are media types. You know, what's the next media that you might want to put on the web? And there's audio too, right up there. And 3D, interactive 3D, right? This is one approach that you can look at it. Now, from the other perspective, you can go, okay, well, I'm not a web programmer, but I'm a graphics programmer, and I'd like to reach a lot of different platforms. I want to run on Windows, Linux, Mac. I want to run on desktop and mobile. So I want to reach all these people with my graphics, and one way to do that is with the web, right, because you can run inside a web browser. So WebGL is interesting in that you see web people coming to the graphics, and you see graphics people going to the web. From my observation, I see a lot more web people coming to graphics than I do graphics people going to the web. However, I think that will be changing maybe in the next year or two, especially as you see more of the game developers being focused on doing, you know, pretty hardcore games in the browser as opposed to what we've seen so far with Flash. And in fact, I think we'll see at GDC next year and the year after a big uptick in the amount of WebGL going on there. So one of the great things about going in the web browser is that your apps can run no plugin or install, no admin rights, right? So, I mean, literally, WebGL is 3D in a web browser. Like, you go to your Gmail and you didn't install anything, or you go to CNN.com, same deal here. And that's pretty important because depending on the user, some people can't install software. Like, some people, they're not admins on their machine, or they work for a company that they're locked down, so if they want to get something installed, it's just like months and months of red tape. And then other people just don't want to install something. I'll try this game if I can go to the web page and run it, but I won't try it if I have to download it and go through the whole process. The other thing about WebGL is they've made it run on most GPUs. So it's really OpenGL ES2, or similarly like Direct3D 9. So pretty much any GPU that's been out since, I don't know, 2004, it should run on. So it's pretty good there, and also mobile. Like, you know, it pretty much has a common denominator between mobile and desktop. And I'll show you some statistics in a little bit. But literally, WebGL, look, they took OpenGL S2, they tweaked it a little bit, and they made it available to JavaScript. And I'm serious when I say JavaScript, right? And I'm like a long-term C++ guy. Like, I remember when I was at SIGGRAPH when they announced this, and I was like, no way, you guys serious? We're going to program in JavaScript? But it works. It works pretty well. It works really well. So let's see. Let's look at a couple demos. I'm sure if you just Google, like, WebGL, you'll find 1,000 demos. But this one was quite popular. It just shows some water simulation just with a height field. So if you're in, like, 563... you know, you'll see that the height field is not necessarily the hardest thing in the world to do. And it's also rendering some caustics using the floating point textures. And this is a pretty simple app. You know, it's getting decent frame rate on my laptop here, which is a 260M, which is like a GeForce 9. And this has been out for a little while now. And then these guys at Opera have done... they wrote a game using both. So, right, WebGL or OpenGL, even though we use it for 3D, right, it's just as capable for 2D as well. So these guys wrote a game, and they used both Canvas 2D, which is like built-in 2D rendering in HTML5 or for the web. And then they also have a WebGL implementation. They can switch the frame rate here, and the WebGL one is quite a bit faster. Although I don't know why it won't start. Well, that's what I get for running something live. But you guys can check it out on this. Links on the slides. But people are doing pretty cool things at this point with WebGL. So just in terms of like what's in it, what's not in it, all the stuff that we've been using in this class is in WebGL. Vertex shaders, fragment shaders, buffers, textures, frame buffers. Now, some of the more advanced stuff or more recent OpenGL features are not there. geometry shaders, tessellation shaders, the stuff in OpenGL 4 that Sean talked about is not there. Multiple render targets, this is probably like the bit, and there's so much debate right now in the WebGL mailing group about this, but the ability to have multiple fragment outputs in a single pass is not there yet. And I believe that there's a lot of debate about it because not all mobile hardware can do it. And then there's things that are just coming out. So floating point textures, they're coming in as an extension, compressed textures as an extension. Being able to write the fragment depth value, that's coming in also as an extension. So it's evolving, but again, if you're going to reach a lot of different platforms, you have to be careful what features you wind up using. How many, for homework four, how many people did the WebGL for the mesh? Did anyone do WebGL? No? One? You did both. I was thinking about offering that for extra credit, but I'm like, it's going to be too easy if you've done, if you already did one of them. Yeah, it's really straightforward. Good. Yeah, no, so Carl's right in that for the homework four for that vertex shader wave, it was literally the same exact shaders that ran in WebGL and ran in your C++. So what I'd like to say about WebGL, like if you know OpenGL, you already know WebGL. Like I don't have to show you like all the function calls, they're exactly the same. The only thing is, like, if you know C++, doing serious JavaScript, that might take a little getting used to because it's a much more loosely typed language. The compiler really doesn't, you know, there's no compiler to help you. The tools are good, but maybe not as good in terms of debuggers. So there are some alternatives for WebGL that, you know, you guys have seen Flash or Microsoft Silverlight or even Java applets and Unity 3D. Have you guys, who's used Unity here? You guys are all using Unity. DMD. You know, they have a good web plugin. But I don't think any of the alternatives to WebGL are really as seamless. Like WebGL is part of the web. You know, it's integrated in there. You go to a web browser, that's it. There's no install. I don't know what the future of Flash is. Even the future of Silverlight, I think, is not good. And then applets are bulky and you're not gonna get all different platforms. So I really think that WebGL is the best out of all of these in terms of reaching the best audience with the best experience. And I'm incredibly biased, too. But I should preface this entire talk with I'm very biased towards WebGL. And I'm biased in terms of browsers as well. So you should take these opinions as mine and not the university's. Oh, and I will not, like, there will be nothing on the exam like, what browsers support WebGL? Or, you know, there's, like, nothing like that. So take a lot of this talk right now as informative, not as a, I need to memorize all this stuff so that I can take a test. Like, there's no way I'm going to be like, in April 2012, did iOS support WebGL? That's not, you know, that's not an academic interest kind of question. But look, like, if you want to create a context to do rendering in WebGL, this is all you need. You create a canvas tag in your HTML, and then in your JavaScript, you say, get me that canvas, and then get me the context off of that canvas. Right now, in C++, even with, you know, with Glue and with FreeGlut, you need a lot more code than this. So WebGL, like there's, you know, you get Notepad, type this in, and then double-click in your HTML file, and you're done. Right? It's really that simple to get started. Then look, all of the function calls, you know, you've seen these. Get rid of the dot and make the first letter there uppercase, and it looks like C++ code. Right now, of course, there are some differences. So for example, when you create a vertex buffer in C++, the contents of that are undefined. In WebGL, they're going to be guaranteed to be zero because they don't want anyone to be able to read uninitialized memory. They don't know where it came from. They don't want any security problems. And some of the functions have different parameters and that maybe there's different overloads in C++ or JavaScript, but they're so similar that like you don't have to like go study WebGL for days to start using it. Just start doing it. Just do it. So one thing that might be a little bit different for you is how do you do an animation loop, right? I told you this does an animation loop, but does anyone want to give me any details on how exactly they think this works? Like, what's this mean down here? Stop. Right, so that's right. So this function is called tick, and then I'm executing it once. I'm calling it, And in the comments here, we draw the scene. And then this window, I'm telling the browser, I go, I want you to draw me again and call this function, tick. So in JavaScript, functions are first-class objects. You can treat them just like you could any other type. And what we're doing is we're letting the browser really do the loop for us. So, for example, if our tab is not current, it might not call us again to enemy. Or if it's got us, or it's going to sync us at 60 frames a second to be matched up with the refresh rate. So this is like the preferred way to handle animation as opposed to doing the timer yourself. Yeah, so before I try to argue that I think WebGL performance can be good, what would be your argument against, you know, say you're a game company, you're going to do a startup, what would be your argument, your performance argument against using JavaScript in WebGL? There is no argument? No? What's
using JavaScript in the browser is very slow.
And Carl, what do you say?
Since JavaScript's an interpreted language, it's apparently
slower. Yeah, JavaScript is, it's interpreted, yes, and it's JITted, right? So it's just in time compiled, too. In fact, they have heuristics where they figure out what parts of your code they should JIT and what they shouldn't. But even so, JavaScript is so dynamic that it's very hard, depending on what features you're using in that language, it's very hard for them even to JIT it and make it run quickly. Okay, so I guess the argument could be that, you know, if you had to pick some very loose number, you could say, like, JavaScript is 10 times slower than C++. Okay, so what's the counter argument? What if I said that we could get decent performance in JavaScript and WebGL? Yep?
It's kind of like write once, run anywhere.
Okay, so maybe we can take less performance because we can really reach a lot of people. Not what we were going to say?
Yeah, we can still get access to GL cells and it's as fast as on the desktop.
Yeah, so Knopf has the nail on the head here in that your graphics is still running on the GPU. Like when you do GL draw arrays or GL draw elements, everything going through that pipeline is still going through the GPU pipeline. Now, there is going to be a bit more driver overhead because the driver stack has more going on in a browser. In fact, we'll see that there's some multi-process communication going on. But it's not going to kill you. It might be a bit slower, but ultimately, the processing is in the GPU, right? So for your graphics, you know, you can get graphics apps. If you're really GPU bound, you'll get very similar performance from C++ and JavaScript. And I had some numbers in the chapter. Yep, Ian?
I'm sorry, could you crash your graphics card by running WebGL? Or is it more secure than?
What do you guys think? Can we crash? Knopf's got an answer for everything today. What?
First time experience, yes.
Yes. So there has been a lot of debate about security in WebGL. In fact, I didn't put any exact details in these slides because I don't want to go on record saying one way or the other. But Microsoft has gone on record saying that they won't implement WebGL because of security concerns. They are unfounded, and they have the same security issues in Silverlight, which is hilarious that they try to blame WebGL. But you can run into concerns, for example, what if I did a draw call with a really expensive fragment shader and a whole lot of geometry and I tried just to hang the machine, just a denial of service attack. Same idea as what if I launched a CUDA kernel that, you know, just sat in a loop for a really long time, as in forever. So what they do in WebGL to get around this is they have watchdog timers where you do a draw call, and it's like, well, how long did that draw call take? Maybe it took a second or 2 seconds. And they're like, okay, that's taking too long, and they'll kill your tab. But what they actually do, and this kind of is annoying, they'll kill every OpenGL context in the browser, right, in the driver, I think. And then they'll tell you that they killed your context. And then depending on if they think you were the guilty one or not, they'll let you recreate one. It's called context loss. It's actually kind of a pain. And I think they're changing the API, which is why I don't handle this event like in my engine. I'm waiting for them to make it easier for me. So you can have things like that. And then there's other security concerns, too, where people would go, okay, for example, cross-origin research, resource sharing. Have you guys heard of that? CORS, C-O-R-S. So you can have data can come from different domains in the same web browser. You know, maybe I get an image from whatever, pen.ed, and then I get some JavaScript from, you know, google.com or whatever. And things coming from different domains really can't cross-pollinate. In particular, in WebGL, I really am not supposed to be allowed to read images from other other domains, especially if you imagine something like, say I'm on my banking website and I download like an image of a check, and then you have some malicious JavaScript. That JavaScript shouldn't be able to read back that image. And the exploit that they tried to do with WebGL here was that they would render the image, and they would render one fragment at a time, and based on the luminance of it, which you guys will do in homework 5, they would time time it based on how bright it was, and then they'd get an approximation of what the image looked like, and that was an exploit using WebGL. Except they plugged this up, where basically you just can't read, you can't create textures from images that aren't from your domain, unless the domain allows you to do so. An example of a domain that would allow you to do so is like Google Maps, where you're downloading image tiles, and you know there's no need to like hide them from anybody, so they just say, okay, these are course safe. So those are really like the two security things, the denial of service attack and the cross-origin. But I feel that I and the community as a whole feel that there's really no security issues at this point with WebGL. It would be a very interesting project in the future, though. If students here think that there are other security issues, we could explore them as a project. It'd be pretty cool. All right, almost out of time. Let's see. Performance. So there's a bunch of other APIs in the web world that play really nicely with WebGL. So, for example, HTML5 has pretty good video support, a built-in video tag. And then you can composite any of the 2D UI stuff, right, and it blends really nicely right over the WebGL scene. And you're starting to see, I don't know how to word it, you're starting to see some parallelism in JavaScript in that there's web workers for basically creating multiple threads. However, they don't have shared memory like what we're used to on the CPU or even on the GPU. And instead, everything is done with message passing, which used to be actually kind of expensive, where the message passing literally had to copy data. Like, you know, imagine that you had a vertex buffer. You had to convert it to JSON, which is a copy, and then to get it onto your web worker, and then convert it back. But now they're able to do it without copies, which is pretty sweet. Okay, let me just tell you guys a little bit about the WebGL support so you guys kind of know where it is right now, and then I'll stop, and we got two student presentations. But in terms of support, it's on all the major browsers on the desktop, except for Internet Explorer. Market share for Internet Explorer continues to drop, and it will become zero, hopefully, in the future. And the best alternative right now, if your users have to run Internet Explorer, is Chrome Frame as a plugin that pretty much literally runs Chrome in one of your IE tabs. It's still using the IE network stack, right? So it's still doing HTTP through the browser, but your tab literally runs Chrome, and you can just put one line in your HTML file that says, if you have Chrome tab, Chrome Frame, use it. Otherwise, ask them to install it. So desktop's looking pretty good. Chrome, by the way, I mean, it's the best browser. The V8 and JavaScript, it's always faster than Firefox. Firefox is good too, but Chrome it's got the fastest engine. I don't work for Google. I know people that work at Google. I know people in all these places, and I'm not biased to, I'm not incentivized to tell you one way or the other, but from my personal experience, Chrome is the fastest here. So the WebGL stats, there's a great website if you just Google WebGL stats, and I ran it this morning, and it told me out of all the people that have went to it, 54% have had WebGL support. It's only been out for a year. That's pretty good, 54% for 1 year. So that number's just going to get higher and higher. If you want to know exactly all the implementation-dependent limits, you can Google WebGL report, or this is something my intern made, where it tells you, well, you know, how many textures can you have, or how big can those textures be, or how many uniforms can you have. Really useful for debugging. Angle, I'll skip. Oh, on Windows, sometimes your WebGL gets converted to Direct 3D9, believe it or not. Your GLSL will get converted to HLSL. And there's a great chapter on this in my upcoming book. It sounds like this is like kind of easy and like like this would be easy and just mechanical, but there's actually a whole lot of issues in terms of dealing with this, because DirectX 9 and WebGL don't necessarily line up feature for feature. Okay, so I just want to tell you guys mobile. Mobile is interesting right now because really we want to be able to use WebGL to support desktop and mobile. Mobile support is getting better, but it is not there yet. For example, Firefox has WebGL implemented, the Firefox on Android. However, because of the way their compositing works, as of now, as far as I know, there's a huge performance bottleneck because what they do is they render the scene, and then they literally have to read it back, and then composite it with the rest of their engine. So that readback is really killing performance. And I know they've told me that they're working on it as of, I think, since like November. They said they were working on it, or they're going to work on it. So hopefully soon that will get fixed. Opera has WebGL support, pretty good. And apparently the Opera guys say that a lot of people use Opera. Does anyone use Opera on their phone in here? No? They're supposed to have like 20% market share or something on mobile. And then finally, the stock browser in Android does not have WebGL. However, I know NVIDIA is working on it. They demoed it last summer. And this should be out, like, I don't know why it's not out, but it should be out soon. Chrome beta is now right on mobile, and I have a feeling that Chrome's going to get WebGL very soon, and you may see some interesting things happen with the stock browser, but I don't have any official word. Google I.O. is in June. I think they'll make some announcements then. All right, finally, for support, and then I'll wrap up for the student presentations. iOS. Right, so I guess this, I'm not really, let's see, we have one Apple in this room so far. Yeah, one out of the two laptops I see 50% Apple users. So apparently Apple likes to lock things down first before they open it up to all developers. So for WebGL, Apple has made WebGL available to iAds developers. So these are people that make advertisements that are kind of very well controlled by Apple. So I feel though, or the community feels, that Apple will open up WebGL on iOS soon once they really, give it a run for its money here. So I think moving forward, just the WebGL support across desktop operating systems and across mobile is going to be very good. But let me just summarize by saying that don't feel that it is definitely right once, run anywhere. So, for example, I might have a really intense fragment shader, and it runs great on that GTX 680, and then when you try to run it even on your Tegra 3 on your tablet, it's day and night. You went from 300 frames a second to 3 frames a second. So you're still going to have to tailor at least some of your code for the different platforms. All right, so we'll stop there for the WebGL. Sorry, I'd love to talk more, but we have two big student presentations today. Any questions for WebGL? We talked a little bit about performance, security, support. I mean, these are really the major things. Programming in JavaScript doesn't suck that much. I mean, I was like terrified. The only thing that really slowed me down from wanting to adopt WebGL was I love programming in C++, and I don't want to be a web guy. But I've been doing it now for a little over a year, and it's JavaScript is pretty good. It's definitely tolerable in some parts of it, I think, are really nice. All right. Let's see. First up, we have Connect, right?
Yeah.
All right, come on up. You want to use my computer?
Yeah.